All right. Hi, this is not Paul, but Matthias. And yeah, as you can see from the screen, we are going to talk today about the famous Breakwater Festival, the estuary conference here in Mannheim, Germany, which is coming up at the end of this month, end of October, in just 3 weeks. So if you want to get your ticket, you can see the link below the video and get your ticket and take part in this amazing event, which will take place from October 27 to 29. And almost all speakers of Breakwater Festival are here today, except for Thomas Steininger. He couldn't make it, unfortunately. But it was hard to find another date, so we are just trying to do this today. And we already had one offline meeting with all speakers. And the goal for today is to do a little warm up for the event. And as I said, Breakwater Festival in Mannheim, Germany. And the subtitle is Paths, People, and Places: Navigating the Journey of Meaning. And we have here in this circle today David and me, who are organizing the event together with Cassidy, who also isn't able to participate today, but like we are the three of us, we are organizing this event. And we have our speakers, Paul van der Kleij, Andrea Lewis, and Aaron van Os. Welcome, everybody.
Thank
And
you.
yeah, welcome. And the first question we have to you as speakers for us for a little warm up is, how do you feel about the approaching festival? And any one of you can go first.
I've had two conversations with Thomas. One has been posted on my channel, and the other one will be posted. And I'm super excited to spend some time with him and continue our conversation. The second conversation, we sort of pursued more spiritual bodies and how they work in terms of meaning and in this world. And so and the rest of you, I know a little bit more than I knew Thomas. I didn't know him as well. So I found him to be an excellent conversation partner. And so I'm really looking forward to being together.
I guess I have the same though. I don't know. I have never met Andrea in person, so I'm really curious to
I've
do
never
that.
met any of these folks in person, so don't worry.
Okay, so that's good. That lowers some of the pressure.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited precisely because like I'm both a fan of the arts as well as of philosophical and spiritual ideas. And I guess that's something that Andrea very nicely combines in what she's talking about. And then I've sometimes been afraid that even though we organize events within like this little corner, that it tends and the goal of estuary is the sweet and the salt water and combining those two, that it still tends towards more churchgoers lately, which I'm obviously positive about because you know that it's a good development in many respects. But at the same time, it feels that that might also threaten the welcoming of also new people to the space. And that's why I'm very excited that Thomas is here too, as kind of more this Fervaky correspondent. Obviously, he has his own project. So I'm also very intrigued by the breadth sort of that we can expect during the festival. Looking forward.
So how am I feeling? I'm feeling like super unprepared, if I'm being truthful. Although it was good that I was asked to provide my talking points because I didn't have them at all until I was asked. So,
But they sound very good, so I'm very excited about your talk. So.
okay. Well, I'm excited and nervous. It's one thing to be turning on my computer and the lights and making sure my microphone's working. And then, okay, time to talk. But it is a completely different thing to be speaking in front of people. So I mean, I hope it'll be good. I'm being way too honest right now. I'm feeling kind of nervous about the fact that I'm having to speak in front of people, but I'm happy that I'm not alone. Thanks, Paul, for
Not
being
alone.
my conversation partner for this.
And I think it will be good. I'm actually really looking forward to the get-togethers and the little chats, and because though that's what it really is. Like being a speaker is fine, and the speaking that I'll be doing is good, but I do think the talking after will be very like rich. So I am looking forward to that because I don't find that difficult. I mean, maybe you like remind me of your names. Can we wear name tags? Other than that's the only nervous thing I have about names, is like names. But I'm fine to chat with people. It's the we'll see how it goes on stage. It'll be fun. It'll probably be fine once it gets going.
But Andrea, your idea is to have Paul on the stage as well for your topic, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Being that I cannot do a speech for an hour and a half. So.
And do you want to briefly tell Paul your bullet points you sent us? Maybe that's also good for
Oh,
his
right. Oh, yeah.
preparation.
So I suppose maybe you'd want to know. Although I do think that Paul would be like up to just doing on the fly, but like, I guess it'd be a good idea. So what are they? Okay. So I want to talk about like with the modern world being changing so much, particularly for gender. So I'm looking at male and female because my channel focuses mostly on, the feminine within stories or film or things like that. And so, with me trying to follow along with the theme, I am actually, I think I might just pull them up on the message I sent you because I don't have them memorized. But
Yeah.
it basically has to do with how do we navigate being a man and a woman in these times. But that's too. I promise they are better. I just need to
They are
find
good, and I like them especially also. I mean, Aaron wants to talk about Nietzsche, and you want to talk about masculine and feminine, and it's also the journey of meaning. It's also like topics that, for example, Jordan Peterson, with whom all of this started, are topics of him as well. So I think that fits together very good.
Okay, so I pulled them up, unless we want to move on, but I have them here.
Great.
So Paul, take notes. No, just kidding. I have them here. You don't have to take notes.
I'm recording this.
Oh,
You're taking
right.
notes for me.
Okay. Okay, so the title of the talk is How to Find Our Way in a World of Deconstruction. And the subtitle is Finding the Role of the Masculine and the Role of the Feminine. So, how do we identify within our role as masculine or feminine in a time when lines are deeply blurred and we have a few models to look to? Why does understanding these roles matter? How do stories or narratives help to remind us and to understand the ideal masculine slash feminine? Why do modern stories so often present role reversals where it's a woman playing a masculine-esque character, for example, say Captain Marvel. And why do stories, oh, sorry, how does this reflect the deconstruction of modern society? So those are what I would like to focus on. It doesn't have, like, those are just the talking points. We don't have to exactly, I'll probably get some specific questions, but I just want to know. In how do we find our purpose, meaning striving on our road? I imagine a map. When I've heard the name of this festival, I'm just imagining like making our way in life and a map, a sort of Tolkien-esque type map is how I imagine it, And there's like Mirkwood. I feel like we're going through Mirkwood right now as a society. Anyway. So the idea is I just want to how so there's a lot of different things you can look to be like how do I navigate who I am and my journey through and the masculine and feminine those are aspects that are I think really important in being comfortable and grounded in these things I think helps us to move through life well so but then well, why so
That
that's
sounds
it.
very interesting. I'm really looking forward to this. Paul, when you hear this, can you imagine yourself on stage and talking about this topic?
I think I'm going to have to do some preparation. I've got a lot of thoughts, but I want to do a little bit more reading and thinking about it, because I think it's a vitally important topic. I mean, part of our dilemma is that there's so much available to us. And that's one of the huge changes in modernity, that men and women themselves have so many more options for the decisions that we make going forward in life. You know, even just the optionality of family, which has developed in the last, you know, in the last number of decades, how this is a massive change that in many ways we've just sort of taken for granted. And then of course part of what's thrown women into the workforce, not just the workforce, but into career pursuits, was the shock of the divorce revolution, where suddenly women had assumed a level of support in the world, and then suddenly, oh, well, that man can divorce you, and you know, a lot of poverty is the product of divorce. Children often stayed with women, and men sort of went their own way. I heard a really interesting interview with Nancy Percy, who's just written a new book about this, and she goes back to the Industrial Revolution and sort of traces a lot of these key moments. And so that's just within my lifetime in the 70s, when women discovered that if men were going to abandon them or no longer be faithful partners with them, then they might very well just be sort of subject to poverty, them and their children. And so that sent a whole cadre of parents telling their daughters, well, we would really like you to marry and have children, but you need a plan B. So by the way, in your 20s, make sure you get the footings down for a good career, so that if plan A doesn't work out, you at least have plan B and you won't be plunged into poverty. I don't know if that's, you know, it's interesting that we'll be talking in Europe, and my impression is that the European safety net, social safety net, is quite a bit more vigorous, as is the Canadian than the American one. But this had a deep impact in the United States, where even conservative parents look at their daughters and say, you need the educational footing for a career, because men are no longer reliable. Mm-hmm. So, and marriage is no longer a safe haven. So there's a lot. And then, and that, I think subsequently, a lot of the conversations now with respect to women who are basically following a career track.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now suddenly, oh, you can have it all. Can I really? You know, can I really develop a career and raise children, especially if the man is, for the most part, on a career track so that he can bring money in to give us a certain level of life? I mean, it's a huge topic. So, yeah, we'll talk.
You know, yeah, children become accessories, and you outsource what you can't do at home.
Yeah. And so, and that gets into demographic collapse. Family sizes are smaller. Children are no longer economic assets. They're economic liabilities. And then children also sort of become these lifestyle accessories, where mm-hmm. I want to mold my child so that my child enhances my experience of life. Well, that's a little selfish. So there's a ton there. So I'm sure we'll have a lot.
Don't hijack it. Don't have the conversation too early.
Very true. Yeah, I think you will just have I'm looking forward to it, and you will have enough food for talk. Paul, you already talked to Thomas two times, and you heard now what Andrea is planning to talk about. Have you already thought of your speech, your talk at Breakwater Festival? Do you have an idea what you want to talk about?
Oh, not yet. This is all helpful. you know, as with the Chino conference and the Thunder Bay conference, the warm-up conversations are really helpful. It doesn't take me a long time to prepare a talk. You know, I do it every week. The intersection of where Thomas and I spoke with, one of the things that interested him about me was, I think, a big question in this little corner, which is, what is the relationship between people who are sort of rooted in a historical religious tradition and those who are more out there in terms of a generic meaning crisis? And, you know, obviously, from the last festival, a good number of people in our community have sought to reroute themselves in religious traditions. And some of them, Orthodoxy, of course, a very old and deep religious tradition. Others to reroute, let's say, in a Protestant tradition that perhaps they never fully left, or one that's available, some Catholicism. So I think, I think these are all the topics that we continually sort of circle around. And so for Thomas, who grew up Roman Catholic and has sort of been in, let's say, the Vervaekian space, where they're trying to reconstruct something without necessarily the institutional and community connections. This was actually going to be the first topic we proposed for Chino, but some people didn't sort of like the framing. But I really do think it is, in many ways, the real, or one of the real deep issues in the corner, similar to what Andrea is pointing out in terms of, well, how do I proceed as a man or a woman? And this is it really plausible and possible to this question that John Vervaeke says, are the legacy religions tapped out? Obviously, many people believe no, so they've gone back to them. Others look at the legacy religions and say they're not really a viable option. And I've sort of been in the middle, thinking that, well, I'm certainly not leaving Christianity, but I tend to think that we're going to see Christianity do what it has done many times in terms of continue to sort of adapt and reshape as it engages all of this technological and social disruption. So it'll be probably along those lines. It'll be what we're always talking about, but probably just continuing now with the speakers and the people in the room. And I think especially for me, it's tremendously stimulating to be in a European context, because Europe is so fascinating in that, on one hand, you have the roots of many of the Christianities in North America. And at the same time, Europe is even more deeply secular. So mm-hmm. I think Europe is a fascinating place for these conversations.
Absolutely. And Germany as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
But well, Germany is Europe, isn't it?
Germany's in many ways the center of Europe. I mean, it was the intellectual vanguard, you know, coming in the, you know, to the peak of modernity. Almost all of the major modern philosophical movements and theological movements have their beginnings in Germany. The English, in many ways, sort of adapted some things, and the Dutch are always sort of in the middle. And so, no, Germany's, we're just going to be a little ways from Heidelberg, which is, you know, the namesake and the origin of probably the most important document in the Christian Reformed Church, which is the Heidelberg Catechism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we also will be having a lot of Dutch people coming to the Breakwater Festival. And Aaron, could you also share your points for your talk? You want to talk about Nietzsche. Maybe you can just go into this a little bit, that would be good.
Of course, yeah. I think my experience was a little bit similar to Andreas in terms of feeling a little bit unprepared, even though at the same time, probably similar to Andrea, like you've been working with this for years now. So it also makes complete sense that something is just going to show up while we're working towards it. But I sent you a tentative title for the talk, which is right now, Nietzsche and Christ. And then it's like reconcilable or irreconcilable responses to the meaning crisis. This is somewhat subject to change because I think there's more to it. And since the subject or like the theme is peoples and places that and paths, I'm interested in that too, because I feel like someone like Nietzsche, I've really related in a very personal manner to. And that's why like I can identify with something that John Favreki says, when you meditate so long on an author that at some point you start seeing the world through their eyes. Sometimes, like especially with someone like Nietzsche, it can even become a bit scary to do that at times. But it was a very powerful tool to really see, like, oh, okay, especially when I was going through a difficult time in terms of my own understanding of religion, to really see, like, okay, what am I willing to lose? Am I willing to give up? And that's, I think, so there's lots of points where we can actually come to agree with sort of the Nietzschean movement that is, in my opinion, also happening. And I think people either consciously, so you have people like Uberboyo, like a YouTube channel, and they very consciously identify themselves as sort of, you know, people who are in some ways followers of Nietzsche. But Nietzsche influenced Jung and therefore Peterson. He influenced Heidegger and therefore the whole phenomenological tradition, and Derrida. And so like there's so many things, actually many, I should say it, developments in our culture that are profoundly related to this individual. And therefore I'm fascinated to see, like, okay, is there something we can integrate in this sort of criticism of Christianity that he's bringing, to a certain extent strengthening ourselves, but then also trying to find out. And that's why I want to make it a bit more personal. So what I've done in preparation, and I've done that over the past few years, is look at a lot of his personal letters, his also commentaries of like what other people who knew him intimately said about him, which actually becomes kind of interesting, because I think you get a much more Christian image of Nietzsche if you look at what people said about him, if you look at some of his letters, as opposed to when you just read, you know, the vitriolic attacks that he keeps sending out. And I think if you do that, you can kind of in a very interesting manner see that there might be this extent to which actually integrating the Nietzschean criticism was of good help to Nietzsche himself, and maybe could be, and that's going to be a discussion. That's why it's going to be an interactive lecture that I'm hoping to do. It could be an interesting way of maybe strengthening, you know, our own purposes and aims in this little corner of the internet, because we're also trying to be open to external influences. But then also to see, like, okay, I want to take seriously the fact that Nietzsche went mad, like he went completely insane, and I want to be respectful to that and not just say so anything goes and we should criticize whatever we want, and therefore to kind of start a conversation on what are the helpful strains of Nietzscheanism, for instance. And that can be anything, like I think I mentioned in the points that I sent you that you have a strong Nietzschean vitalism culture, which is actually embodied probably best by people like Andrew Tate, who in some ways, you know, like they inspire young men, and in other ways they're obviously very problematic. So I want to try to have a nuanced debate based around the person of Nietzsche himself. So I'm going to present probably a lot of his ideas, of his texts, of what other people said about him, and then try to draw that, like, from the person Nietzsche to a broader cultural context and see to what extent this can be helpful or threatening. And I'm not going to give the final answer there. That's going to come out, hopefully, in the conversation at the festival. So that's a short overview.
Sounds great.
Good.
Thanks. I already have questions, so.
Nietzsche is, if you look at Tom Holland's Dominion, which, you know, for me is also an important book, Nietzsche deeply influenced Tom Holland. A lot of Tom Holland's wrestling is around Nietzsche. And I think you're exactly right. And Nietzsche is probably someone that this corner needs to pay more attention to. And I think in the broader way that you just laid it out, Aaron, I think that's tremendous.
Yeah, I'm trying to make it as broad as possible, and then sort of then zero back in on what can we actually do with this, because otherwise it becomes too overwhelming, like it did for Nietzsche himself. So we're gonna try to balance that. But yeah, thank you, Paul. Nice.
Sounds great. Andrea, you also had a comment on...
No, I just Arons. Had a question. So, well, Paul, why do you say he should be more... This corner should pay more attention? Like, why do you... Why
well,
specifically
again,
Nietzsche?
I see...
I mean, obviously we're talking about him, but...
Part of the deep... Part of what holds the interest of this corner is this question that Verveke, I think, nicely lays out, this tension within Verveke about what he calls legacy religions and viability in a contemporary space. You know, Nietzsche seemed to, on one hand, bring one of the most devastating critiques of Christianity, but also at the same time raise the realization that we can't live without this. You know, when you kill God, what does that mean? Because Christianity is so deeply embedded even in its great critics. And so, you know, I mean, when you look at Jesus himself, on one hand, a tremendous critic of the what was going on in terms of the religious patterns of his day, yet also, you know, very much going down to the roots and affirming the roots. And so in some ways, Nietzsche does a similar thing. And I think you're right, Aaron, that I'm by no means an expert on Nietzsche, and I've paid not enough attention to him. But he also seems to have that play that double role of, on one hand, saying this slave morality, does this really work? I mean, that's deep renunciation. But on the other hand, can we really live without it? And when I just saw a Twitter thread that someone pointed me to the other day, where it was an atheist basically acknowledging Tom Holland's argument, saying, yeah, all these atheists are just deeply accept Christian morality, and we atheists need to get beyond Christian morality. And I thought, oh, wow, well, there's Nietzsche. That was his project. And
that was actually his project, yeah.
And how successful was that project? And in fact, would anybody buy it? Because it seems to me that I don't see any real alternative to the morality of Christ that he has given to us. And I don't see anybody, you know, okay, oh, Andrew Tate. All right. Is that really where we want to go? Men and women together? I don't think so.
You can see the relations, like between, or the connections between the talk of Andrea and mine, and therefore also of your. This is going to be hopefully fascinating to combine all.
Yeah. I have one more question. Sorry, why did he go mad? Because he couldn't reconcile these two things?
Like, well, yes, at least like that would be my argument. I can say more about it. Like, obviously, like a common thesis that he got syphilis, but that's actually never been confirmed. What seems more likely, and that's also what friend commentaries, like, they reveal this about him. If you look at his waanbrieven, so his madness letters that he wrote out after he went insane, he had his mental breakdown. About half of them, he signed off with Dionysus, like the Greek god Dionysus.
Yeah,
that's really the anti-Nietzschean strain. And the other half, very interestingly, he signed off with the crucified. So it's almost like, okay, in his madness, he already opposes these two. And then also like the last sentence before, like in his final book that he published, or that was actually published after his death, was also, have I been understood, Dionysus versus the crucified? And I'm actually trying to argue that both are fundamentally important. And you can see this in what friends say about him too, is like, he was trying to balance both of them, but to such an extent that he couldn't anymore. That, and René Girard had also has interesting things to say about this. Perhaps I'll have more time at the festival to explain, but that's where I think, yeah, this will be difficult. So where should we balance the two, until what level?
Interesting. Okay, this is going to be good. I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. Right. I think there are really some great topics on the table for the festival. And Andrea and Aaron, you already have yours worked out quite detailed, and Paul Thomas are kind of in the process. But What I'm also very excited about is the different formats. Aaron, you mentioned you want to give kind of an interactive lecture. And I don't know, should we shortly run through the program that people can get a better idea? Can you give me the screen sharing, Paul? Then I can show something visual.
Okay, there you go.
Thank you. Okay. Can you already see it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this is the schedule for Breakwater Festival. And on Friday, 27th of October, it's just arrival and basically a campfire and open get together. And there will be also a bit of music, and we have the possibility to be outside and in the venue. And David is also kind of our host, because this is a church venue with different buildings, and we have space outside and inside. And Dave and his wife, they run several projects there. I don't know, Dave, do you want to tell a bit more about it, or?
Well, my wife runs the community center called The Villa, and we are on the property that also belongs to the church. So they have extra space from the sanctuary to the fellowship hall, but we have lots of outdoor space, and we're hoping the weather will be nice, especially for Friday evening. We'll have a campfire, and we'll have food to, I think we'll sell food that evening. There'll be a good price to get like bratwurst and that type of thing to enjoy around the fire. I think we'll even have songs. And we're hoping good weather for that evening, because I think we'll have plenty of outdoor space throughout the whole weekend. Hopefully, that'll work out. Otherwise, we have plenty of indoor space.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. And then Saturday is going to start with Paul's lecture, and the topic he will work on that. And then we have Thomas Steininger, his lecture. And the special thing about that is that he wants to do it in a fishbowl setting, which is kind of a new format for here, for Bridges of Meaning and Estuary, because it's he said that he could engage the whole room with this method. So we are excited about that. Then we have lunch, and then Andreas and Paul's live podcast about masculine and femininity in what you talked about, and then Aaron's lecture, and then after that all speakers will reflect on the day, then dinner, and in the evening something very special. We have a Sacred Harp singing. I don't know, did you hear about Sacred Harp before? Anybody?
No.
Not at all?
I can.
Yeah, David, describe it.
I can say something to that. Yeah, I've recently learned about this as well. And back here in Mannheim, we've done it at the estuary now two times, I think. We've done the singing, one of them to practice for for this event. But we have somebody that is part of our estuary that has participated these in years and then also can lead them. And it's a way of doing, of singing. It's basically choir type music, but it's very old hymnal that originates in New England and is still sung in many parts around the world. And it's sung in different cities in Europe. There's different like groups that get together just to sing this hymnal. So it's like really old English text. And the thing is that it's very popular among people that are Christian, that are non-Christian. You know, I just talked to a friend just last week about this, inviting her to come. She's American. She's from Portland. She's like, oh, people in Portland love to sing Sacred Harp. And she's like, there's hardly any. I mean, it's many non people that go to church and they come and sing. So it's, I've heard it described. I just heard a pastor describe it here in Germany. He said it's the heavy metal of choir music. It is because you sing quite loud, and it's more about, it doesn't sound as pretty, but it's very participatory and very loud. And so it's a lot of fun, and we've actually been having a lot of fun singing here in the estuary. So we're inviting people from the community and from Mannheim to participate. As part of our being able to use the facility here, the church wanted us to have one event that we could invite people from the community to. And so we decided on Sacred Harp as a way of participating. And there's a lot of people that will come specifically just because it's Sacred Harp singing. And so we're looking forward to that, doing that with people from Mannheim that will come for in the area to come and sing with us that evening.
And it will be an experiment, as many things. Last year we had two movies with his Jonathan Bijou Meaning Wave Orchestra, and now we have another experiment. And yeah, of course it will be. I mean, people won't be trained in it. It will be strange at the beginning, but I think it will be. It's a good experiment, and yeah, we like to do it at the Mannheim Estuary. So and then
that's how we roll.
Yes, exactly. And then on Sunday, we have a talk between Thomas and Aaron. And Aaron, we should connect the two of you to that you can work on that point as well. Note to myself. because we thought it would be good to connect different speakers, and Andrea is talking with Paul, and we thought it would be good to have a slot for the two of you as well. And then we have Estuary small group discussions, and yeah, if you're off this corner, you know probably what that is. It's basically small groups breaking up, and they will have enough time to get to know each other, make a round of introductions, and then basically talk probably about what the experience of a weekend is and what your thoughts about it are. And then last year in Landa, we also had this estuary panel, and that was about bridges of meaning. And Paul, you were on stage in that slot as well. And this year we will do it an estuary panel on the German community. And some people of the German community will be on stage and discuss the development of our community during the last years, online and offline, and our experiences, and yeah, just share experiences and what we learned. And afterwards, you speakers will have the possibility of closing thoughts. And that's basically the program for the festival.
That's great.
Right.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Oh, the weather looks lovely where you are, Paul.
The weather? This is Northern California. The weather's always lovely. Sorry. It's just true.
Do you guys have any questions or anything you want to add to what we discussed?
I'm super excited about it. I mean, last year's festival I thought was tremendous, and I really love the additions. I'm going to have to look up Sacred Harp on YouTube. I'm sure there's plenty of videos out there of it. And
oh yeah,
again, just getting to know. I hope a bunch of the people that came last year will be able to come again, because there's once you sort of do it again, the relationships build more deeply. Of course, I got to meet, I met Aaron and Matthias last year in person, but I have never met Andrea or David in person. So just really looking forward to all of this. Part of, you know, we focus on, as Andrea said, we focus on the talks and everything, and that's great. But just as with all of the other events, For many people, the real payoff is, in fact, being together, building the relationships, and that's really what I'm excited about, because we can do the thinky talky stuff on the Zoom, but being together, there's nothing else like it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm really looking forward to it, and especially indeed also those aspects, which is why I think, and it seems like all the lectures are that to some extent, but like they have this interactive quality, because I think we're all more interested in the emerging dialogue between us and between the people there, as opposed to sort of what we have to say and the concepts we want to share, and we want other people to think the same things. It's like, I think we're also, like Paul said, like, we're still talking about this. I also can't help, like, and this might be, I might be inspired by Peugeot, but I find it very fascinating in terms of the symbolism that the last conference was about the search for a spiritual home. And now we're meeting in a place which I think literally translated from German is man home, if I'm not mistaken, which I find also in terms of the gender dynamics, a fairly interesting piece of symbolism. So hopefully we can also welcome some of the women and have a more combined and mixed gender dynamic going on. But no, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm meeting all of you and going off the screen, and hopefully more fruits for indeed starting new communities, which is what I think we tried to do last year. Lots of places it was successful, other places it still needs a little bit more impetus. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it for sure.
We get to see Cassidy's baby.
Yay!
Yay!
Oh, yes. Andrea, do you have any closing thoughts?
I really do hope that we can wear name tags. Like, that's one of the things I really want to do, because I'm very bad with names. So that's just a suggestion for my sake.
Cassidy hates name tags.
Oh, okay.
Maybe the two of you can discuss that point.
Okay, well, we'll have some time. Okay, now I'm just gonna have to like improve my memory with.
How will
that.
Andrea know who I am without a name tag?
I know. I'll just be like, who is this giant man with a beard that looks like Santa? So okay, closing remarks. I think it's going to be really fantastic. I didn't go last year, and like I almost feel a little impostery because I'm not European. Oh, Paul, that's
the puppy.
Nice.
It is really existing.
Here is the puppy. There's my jailer.
Oh,
Andrea, I think your talk sounds very, very amazing, honestly. And as Aaron said, it's very important also to have the perspective of women. And I thank you for coming and to be our speaker.
Well, I do appreciate being included. And so I guess I should feel more like a guest than an imposter. But I do really appreciate that, the hospitality that's being extended to me. And I think it's going to be, yeah, really a really enriching experience. And I hope to represent my gender well.
You will. I think it just will be working out very good. Everything that's on the table seems like a very good program, and I'm looking forward to it. I thank you all for participating and for coming. And last year I was excited. It was my idea to start the festival, and people showed up. Paul came from the US, John Venank came, and now you all come. So that's just brilliant, huh?
Fantastic. Thank you so much, also Matthias and Dave, and obviously Cassidy. Like, for having us and for organizing all this, like, it's such a wonderful task you're performing there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Dave, do you have any closing thoughts?
Oh, we're excited. Yeah. No, I'm very excited to have everybody here in this space. There's going to be some other people helping out that are not going to be part of the festival. So somebody from behind the scenes. Oh, I don't know. It's just, it gives a lot of energy to be part of this. I like doing this. I'm going to be cooking for you guys. So this is going to be fun. You guys are going to have a good time here. And it's just going to be cool. You will have a good time because we have a nice place here. This is going to be down to earth. You know, it's a community center. This is not the Four Seasons or a Hyatt. I don't know. What's a high-end hotel? This will be about people getting together. You'll have lots of time with each other. We'll have really good, I think, just downtime and a good space for that. So I think that'll be like Paul said, that's a big part of why you come, is it's the people you meet and the conversations you have. And we want to be good hosts. So we're looking forward to it.
Definitely.
Oh, and we're looking forward to meeting all of you out there who are coming to attend.
And everybody who is still will be buying a ticket. Thanks.
Yes, if you've been wondering or hesitating, like, just don't hesitate anymore. Make that purchase.
Right. That was a good ending, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll end the recording then.
Yep. Bye.